black. WPVMLP, Asheville, North Carolina, 103.7. Streaming online, WPVMFM.org. The voice of Asheville, heard all over the world.
And the lifestyle to now is like two different worlds. Like, you can't compare your childhood to our childhood in a way, because it's like we don't have the same materials or
being changed.
Yeah, I feel like that.
All right. You got some last words, Mr. Fowler?
Build your mind up so we can beat this systematic oppression.
Amen.
All right, I love y'all.
Welcome to the Audio Garden, where we cultivate our collective wisdom, nurture creativity, and spread love. My name is Martha Senator, and this is Listen and Be Heard.
Welcome back to the Audio Garden, my friends. It is so good to be here with you once again. And there's so much growing here in the garden at Listen and Be Heard Network. We have another podcast in the works. This one from the Greenhouse Creators Consortium, of which Sound System Culture is one of six members. And Sound System Culture sponsors Listen and Be Heard Network. And all of the members of the consortium are performing artists, musicians mostly, and I'm looking forward to playing some bits and pieces from that as it gets going. All to be culminating with a festival in September. And we also have a new column that will be exclusively on the website, coming from Mitos Susan in the Philippines, who is an alumni of Listen and Be Heard. She used to write for Listen and Be Heard Weekly back when we were in print in the Bay Area.
Hey, thank you, Martha Senator. This is Hernan Ramiro. It's coming up in our Audio Garden. The essayist and poet Nilsa Rivera will be interviewing Lisa Hadley and Chloe Martinez, who are co-editors of a Chaos Creativity Completion from the University of Chicago Press that brings together essays from writers and poets and artists exploring how ADHD shapes the creative process. The book looks at ADHD not as a deficit to fix, but as a different cognitive rhythm that can affect focus, time, structure, and memory and creative flow, while also usually opening unusual pathways for association, experimentation, and insight. Pretty happening. Find it very interesting for me, as I was recently been diagnosed with ADHD as an artist, and I'm beginning to understand a little bit more about this now that it's and thank you, Ms. Rivera. First, let's have a poem.
I want to tell you everything I know about death. The finality that comes in moments toward tomorrow. The confusion. The relief that what we intuit is true. That life ends in death, as simple as that. That what burns is the fire of incomplete loving. That complete loving belongs only to angels. The rest of us must moan and grieve alone, and in the company of the lost. That the community of the tearful fill an ocean we can float upon, a dead sea, where together we bob and sink till we reach the sands of memory or distraction or wisdom.
That was a beautiful poem by my really good friend, David Gonzalez. That was a piece dedicated to a good friend named Terrell Lee Porter. But it really is about life and death and life, really. The beauty of where we are right now, in the midst of all the chaos. Hey, here's Nilsa Rivera at the Garden Gate.
My name is Nilsa Rivera. I'm a writer. I write personal essays, graphic essays. So here we have Chloe Martinez, who's a translator of Blue Like My Beloved, Poems of Mirabi, soon to be released by New Directions this October. And you are also the co-editor of Chaos, Creativity, and Completion, which is the book that we're going to talk about today. And you are the author of a poetry collection, 10,000 Selves, and a chapbook, Corner Tribe. You also won the NEA Translation Fellowship, and you are assistant editor at a Be Like Poetry Journal. That's awesome. And then we also have Lisa Van Orman Hadley, who is the author of Invisible Things, which I read an essay of, and I'm already going to be ordering that book. And so I'm really excited about having you both today. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having us. We're thrilled to be here.
So I found the book so resourceful. You know, yes, it's about ADHD, but it's also about other mental health illnesses. It's about writing. It's about life in the United States. You know, it's about shame, is about family. So it's about so much. So I wanted to know how you came to the idea of writing the book. But can you tell me a little bit about that process and that experience?
Sure. Definitely.
Start, or should I go first?
Sure. So Nilsa, I really related to what you were saying about getting a late in life ADHD diagnosis and not having any resources about writing in ADHD. And that's basically what brought us to this. I was also diagnosed later in life. I think I was 43, and I posted on social media that I had ADHD, and Chloe and I had been in grad school together 20 years earlier. And Chloe private messaged me and said, I have ADHD too. That got us talking about proposing a panel at AWP, which is a big writing conference. We proposed a panel on writing in ADHD because it was something I was super interested in, but had never read anything about really. What really surprised us was that when we got there, the room was packed full and there were so many people who were interested in the topic. And I think it's because there weren't any resources out there on writing in ADHD. So do you want to step in?
Yeah. And I would say, I mean, also even just ADHD resources in general, I had been diagnosed a while before that in my late 20s, but also had felt like when I got my diagnosis, I read a couple of the kind of ADHD self-help books that were out. I don't know, they weren't super helpful. I felt they didn't reflect my experience that much. And I kind of like read them and took it in and then put it away. And there was also no public conversation about it at that time. It was like 2001 when I got my diagnosis. So I just sort of like filed away that information and didn't really do a whole lot with it or talk a lot about it for a long, long time. And then when Lisa contacted me, which had to have been like basically 20 years later, because Lisa reached out to me and I started having that conversation with her, I began to realize how much my ADHD intersected with all the parts of my life. As you said, the book is about writing, but it's also about family and work and shame and, you know, all these other ways that we live in the world and that are filtered through being neurodivergent. So when I started to have those conversations with Lisa, that was really for me also the first time that I was feeling in community with somebody around this, having conversations about it and thinking about where it intersected with my work. And then I began to realize, oh, like, of course, the fact that I write poems and the fact that my poems are often about like everyday experience, but they also go off in unexpected sidetracks. The fact that I write in the short form, because I actually really struggle with writing something in a longer form that requires a lot more sustained attention and organization. All of that is not necessarily just because of my ADHD, but it's part of it. And so, yeah, it was really fun to think about that panel with Lisa and then to get to have this conversation in a room full of people who were sharing that experience and who had this same kind of like hunger for information and community, I think, that we all had. And then this amazing thing happened, which is super rare for writers and not how my book of poems got published at all. I sent that book of poems out over and over and over again, got many rejections before it was published, but had the unusual experience with this book of an editor from University of Chicago Press approaching Lisa and I after the panel and saying, is there a book about this? And that's how the book came into being, which was really great.
So I read through the 15 essays and reading and laughing, and I'm like, hey, look, this is me. Like throughout the book, I am just pointing out because I have two sons who were diagnosed with ADHD younger, but then my husband also was diagnosed as a young boy. So the house was always fun and spicy.
Our houses are like that too.
Yep. But then I'm the only woman, right? I'm like, and so to be able to see myself in some of these essays was like a big thing for me. I'm like laughing and I'm like almost about to cry. And it was amazing. It's going to become like one of my reference, you know, for when I'm stuck and when I need motivation, but also the prompts that you have available. And it may not, you know, have to be a writer who has ADHD. It can be, you know, anyone. The prompts are great. So I wanted to ask about the structure of the essays because I saw that maybe most are experimental. And then I was reading in the conversation with Kessler that Lisa had a theory and then it was confirmed as the essays were coming in. Can you speak a little bit about that?
Sure. So our editor was a little worried when we proposed this book because we gave the writers like a very loose prompt. We did not give them specific guidelines on what to write about other than it should be somehow related to writing and ADHD, which is pretty wide open. And so our editor was a little concerned that the essays would come in and be all the same. They would say the same things. I don't think Chloe and I were worried about that at all because I always have suspected that writers with ADHD tend to be very experimental and think outside the box and do things in their own way and not follow some kind of formula. And so when these essays started to pour in, that was confirmed for us because, as you mentioned, these essays took such unique forms. There are some that are written in the form of a list. There's one that is like this beautiful visual poem. Someone wrote one where they're basically having a conversation with themselves. And then to get back to what you were saying earlier about the writing prompts, we really wanted to make this book as interactive as possible and not just be like when we were in that conference room. We didn't want it to just be an hour of us talking at people. And so during our panel, we took breaks to do little writing exercises. Chloe had everyone close their eyes and draw a picture and little things like that. For me, I really like to be able to engage during a panel, and we wanted that to carry over into the book as well. And we wanted to have these kind of concrete things that people could take away after reading that they could go try on their own. And so each essay is accompanied by a writing prompt, and those are very delightful. The two of us learned so much from just editing this book. We got so many new ideas that I hadn't considered of how to write with ADHD and such unique approaches. So that was just a delightful process. My son picked up one of Chloe's poetry books off of my coffee table and started reading it. And he looked up at me and was like, you know, Chloe Martinez, like, so amazing. So I'm very proud to know Chloe Martinez, the amazing.
Well, thank you so much again for meeting here and talking about this and writing, co-editing this wonderful anthology with all these awesome writers.
Thank you so much. So nice to get to talk to you.
And thank you, Nilsa Rivera. Now for award-winning writer Catherine Scott Crawford, an interview by Tony Robles. is listen.
You know, I have African American in my ancestry. On my mother's side, are from Louisiana. As far as the slave trade or the human trafficking, whichever term you want to use, how prominent Charleston was that subject of the slaveholding class, and did you have people read that over to guide you through it? Tell us a little bit about that.
You definitely can't write a piece of historical fiction set in Charleston without bringing multiple cultures into the book. There's not a city without it. So Tolliver Jackson is a black man in his late 30s. He runs the Cox Center for African American History and Culture in Charleston. Any sort of writing from a historical point of view is terrifying because we don't really know what it was like. You know, we think we know. We can do our best research. What I did was I tried really hard to research as deeply as I could. I tried really hard to rely on feeling. Like, what do I think these characters would be feeling? You know, like my own experience, like as a mom, as a woman, as whatever, you know, like what would they be feeling? And then I made a really conscious choice not to write from those characters directly. In the 1804 chapters, the point of view is Daniel Pettigrew, the artist who paints the miniature portraits. And he's a white guy, you know, at that time. And I wrote him in a third person close point of view. And then in the 2004 chapters, Gamble is told in the first person.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Tony Robles, and welcome to Listen and Be Heard Radio. If you're checking us out on YouTube, hit the subscribe button. We do want to get a million viewers. If we can get 10 million, that's even better. If you're listening on our website, welcome to our website, listenandbeheard.net.
And Tolliver could have his own book. I mean, he has got untold chapters inside him, but I very purposely chose not to write from Tolliver's point of view. And not that I think that authors can't do that. And not that I think that authors of different races can't write. I'm not going to do that. I don't feel like I own that point of view.
He was written in the third person limited.
Well, he is in Gamble's chapter. So when she's in first person, everything she says about Tolliver is coming from Gamble. Yeah. So he doesn't have a real POV in the book.
When it comes to being an author and considering publishing, I want you to listen to your heart, and that will help your book be heard.
Listening to the rain beating our home like a drum, soaking my garden transplants, just like I planned. That kind of listening feels good. That kind when I have good timing and nature does her work while I write in my notebook, listening. Being heard isn't as easy. Opportunities to be heard are rare, and it's even more rare to feel heard. Why be heard?
This is the Listen and Be Heard Hour. I'm Martha Senator. And Tony Robles has walked a little further down the garden path to meet up with Malaya Ulan, the Youth Poet Laureate of Philadelphia.
You said something really interesting about the community of Philadelphia. Philadelphia is a city of the global majority. Can you talk about what brought you to that? To me, that was bad. I just liked it.
Yeah, so Philadelphia is like, it's a city known for being like majority-minority city.
Mm.
Yeah, it's very diverse. And it was like a big part of my childhood growing up in Philadelphia. Like, I remember my mother, Anita Gavino, she would take me to like different cultural dance things, like Cambodian dance or like Balinese with Indonesian dance. That was a very big part of my childhood. And then also entering the poetry scene, because Philly is like poetry city. Like,
oh, yeah.
So many legends came out of Philly, like Miss Sonia Sanchez, Miss Ursula Rucker, Jill Scott, Flo Tree, Boys to Men, Music Soul Child even,
yeah.
Right? So like the scene is like big here, and it's like very heavily rooted in like activism and black and brown communities, especially in like West Philly, South Philly, there's like big Latino population. West Philly is like also very diverse. There's a lot of like Muslim communities with East African, like Ethiopian, West African, big Nigerian, Senegalese. It's like, it's really like a hidden melting pot because people don't really like recognize Philly as like, oh, it's the one next to New York, right? But like Philadelphia is really like a melting pot of cultures and art because so many youth programs for writing and film. It's like, yeah, this is what's really beautiful about the city.
Nestled inside deep, deep green, under bright, bright sun, there were a people living all together in homes made of reeds from the riverbank and fibers cleverly woven in. It was a tribe, a nation of people, with everyone represented, big, small, smart, dumb, generous, greedy, talented, happy, sad, and intellectual. They were the Buhera Barousi. They worshipped the divinity of the moon, Bomurambi, and lived, died, and left ancestors who eat, breathe, laugh, and love today in a place on the map called Zimbabwe. The honorable king of these proud, peace-loving people, father of one daughter and many sons, was lying inside his hut, too weak to walk out the door and take a look around. His devout and devoted daughter was in despair to see him looking so ready to die. Her name was Mela, and she loved her father with every curve of her heart. Beautiful fruits of the land, prayers of the heart, sweet notes of pipes and whistles, big drums, little drums, and talking drums had been offered on behalf of their respected leader. Every wise healer who had the knowledge of Mother Earth in her hands, the plants of the forest in her mind, the language of Bomurambi on her tongue, had been consulted. Mela couldn't enjoy life. Her father was always on her mind. She walked into the jungle one night carrying old age in her young, strong, and proud heart. She looked up at a shimmering crescent moon and called upon the merciful and enchanting Bomurambi, who always watches and waits for when she is needed. Suddenly, leaves started trembling in her radiant reflection, and Mela heard a thought in her brain that wouldn't go away. You must go to the python healer. Mela's heart started ticking faster. Her lungs started a new rhythm. She turned and squirmed and couldn't sleep just thinking of the dreaded python healer. Her brothers had been there and tried to tell everyone about it, but couldn't on account of their teeth chattering so much from fright they couldn't say anything anyone could understand. When the sun came up, she hadn't slept for half a second. Still, before the first babe cried for milk, she filled her little elephant hide pouch with nuts and headed for the foot of the mountain. Through deepest jungle, ferns tickling her ears, rivers testing her strength, climbing over rocks, sleeping in strange groves, and looking at big animals in the bushes.
That was Martha, Senator.
This is the Listen and Be Heard Hour, brought to you by Listen and Be Heard Network.
Now for a beautiful poem by Kamau Daoud.
divine daughter speaks in tongues of royal chanters. A purple lotus blossom floats in a rich red pool of Bessie's blood at the fork of some southern road. Seven faceless eunuchs in blue, white, red pinstripe suits. Gardenias pinned to the lapels with golden hypodermic needles. Sucking money from cash registers with silver straws. Cigarette smoke turned to fine incense. Whiskey turned to dew. And she rises on the stage, wailing. And from her mouth, an eastern wind swirls and swells like some wild bird's freedom song. Screaming melodic nectar about the 9 zillion times she carried the world within her womb for 9 months, round like a whole note in space, and gave birth on this very same stage she's peeing on. Purification ritual of sweat. With our tears, we wash her feet. The spirits got her rocking. Spirits got her stomping. Spirits got her shaking, knocking the dust from our heads and hearts, engraving the story in our consciousness. And the wind becomes song, and the trees bent over, listening to the earth's heartbeat. Ebon pearls, sculptured African love songs, mystery in city clothes, hurling rainbows, transforming saloons to temples, toad seeds germinating, dancing soil songs, rich with story, earth songs, mountains of memories, nooses hanging from trees, turned to harps and blues guitars, rivers lullabies, breasts nourishing laughter and hope, strength and harmonious groans, dipped in pain and pleasure. And from her full lips the sun rises, spilling onto a stage of light. This fire, warming the room, healing us with cool honey and truth, massaged on eardrums by ancient flower, held in the Most High's hands.
Listen and be heard. Remember that poetry is a way to overcome our silence. Thank you, Adrienne Rich, for putting forth that quotation into the world.
Hey, what's happening, good people? This is Hernan Ramiro. I have a great treat for you as always. Music-wise, we're always going to give you the love. This is a very rare recording I found of the great Bernie Worrell, keyboardist, master, legend, and myself on flute, and the great DJ Logic, Jason Miles, Mike Clark, Jason Miles on keyboards, Mike Clark on drums, Ron Johnson on bass, back in the day. It's a great hang, great jam. Many years ago, we went on the road across the states, and this is one of those gigs. Very rare. Enjoy it. I hope you really enjoy this. As always, don't forget to donate to Sound System Culture. Listen and be heard network. All right? Peace. Support the good stuff, the good music, the peace, right now.
What you got, Bernie?
This is the Listen and Be Heard Hour, brought to you by Listen and Be Heard Network, a project of Sound System Culture.
Walks through the threshold, leaps through garden hoops, knows belonging, fears beyond sensation. I want to be one. My love knows the border. My love charms the peace. My love knows nature, weaves wonders above and nature's rules. My love smiles, my love sings, my love blooms. My love smiles, my love sings, my love blooms. My lords and my ladies, my brothers, my sisters, mamas, daddies, kids, you must connect with it. Beautiful flowers and colors, the layman of the mission, Fairfield is a scene of San Francisco. Berkeley, North women, all around. I want to welcome you to it. You are gathered here tonight at a light club, not in a bar, not in Starbucks, not in a box or over there in the corner of the street. You are gathered here tonight in a modern temple. Would it embarrass you to meet you that I'm not you? We are here to take each other to know. We are here to love each other to know. We are here to dig deep down into our souls and find culture. Because this is sociology, this is anthropology, this is psychology, this is archaeology, this is the study of how I can dig you. And dig you and dig into you, and you are who dig me. Because this is poetry, this is improvisation, this is rhythm, this is heartbeat.
a story by Mary Oishi.
There was a book in the library called Tomboy Teacher, and it was how this tomboy teacher, you know, ostracized, and then one day a child fell down a well, and because of her athleticism, she could rescue the child from the well. I loved that book because it was a whole different perspective on who I was, showing the benefits of being a tomboy. You know, there was a lot of exposure like that that was seemed like an innocent book to these very conservative people, but to me it was like a lifeline, just like the Life magazine. They're trying to block all the exits to critical thinking and to validation of anything other than their idea of what an ideal person is, which is basically a Bible-believing, Republican, male-dominated, all of that, you know, straight, everything that they think is moral. And they're trying to block any exits for anyone who's trapped in that.
Let me take you to the depths, son. I started. This is the a poem I wrote. I don't know how many of you have seen the last book of Anne Sexton's that was published posthumously. And on the back, there is the most incredibly crass picture. There's a picture of this woman after she's just died like a year or so before. And she's smiling or something. And I picked up the book. I mean, I had read it, right? You know, but I hadn't turned it over. And I was sitting in this restaurant and I was reading. And you know, I finished the last poem. I turned the book over and there she was. And I just sort of like freaked out. And I started thinking about how I look at pictures of all the dead people that I loved in my house all the time. If you did walk into my house, you wouldn't think I was in much better shape than the people who published the book, because my walls are lined with all these people in my family I never even saw. Great aunts, cousins who died, children who died at 5 from diphtheria. It just all this stuff around me, and I sort of tried to come to terms with that. And this poem is called For All My Dead and Loved Ones.
Playwright and poet Enezake Shange.
Whatever shall I do with my dead, my tombs and mausoleums? These potted plants tended by strangers over your eyes closed, maybe dreaming, dead, loved so particularly I don't know what to do with you. Shall I see you dancing or hold your child asking, what's my mommy like? Shall I sleep with your husband who sees your child self in my lath? Your mother, will she bosom daughter talk with me or pretend she has been no mother? We'll set our Smokey Robinson romps aside, recollections coming to no good end. And Grandma, must I ride with your daughters to sit in the cemetery on sunny days weeding your womb? Wouldn't it be better if I stayed in my kitchen making gumbo or codfish cakes, watching Edge of Night, at least rubbing my hands on my apron, humming My Eye is on the Sparrow? Your photograph at 25 is on my wall. Already you had given in your woman's self. No one would know you. Only Mama is remembered. When was there more? I shall not lay fondling a dead man's love, baking apples for a lock of hair. But what shall I do with my dead? Love so particularly, leaving me specifically here alone. Some never stop breathing, wanting kisses. Some disappear, slamming the door, banging the phone. One went off in a VW bus, another stole all my strawberries. I sit here drinking memories, entertaining ghosts, longing for arms no longer warm, too enchanted to tend the pulse pushing me on to go off from you. When I meet someone I must know, I place you around me like a court of holy seers. If this stranger is to have a space in my life, he must pull your spirits to his own, for I wander regularly in moments of the dead. If you would have me speak, you must learn the tongue of this one left behind, this survivor of loving too deep and holding out for more.
When I say, ancestors, use me, what a meaning, I surrender. Surrender my life to you, to you, to you, surrender.
If we understand disease with this new kind of diagnosis, the treatment options become radically different.
The medicine we prescribe to address the inflammation of people in Claddagh has been prescribed by others.
Finish that project with USDA, determined to bring the voice of American farmers and ranchers into discussions around what was happening on the ground and on the front lines of climate change.
In today's universities, farming and medicine are both taught through an ahistorical lens, which hides the legacies of land theft, genocides, and labor death that their industries required to exist in these territories. The training is science-based, but selectively so, focusing on science that advances its agendas rather than interrogating its assumption of power. Both farming and medicine had their education and policy shaped by philanthropy.
I like to think about it as sobering. It's bringing to readers the experience from a farmer's perspective, from people who work the land, from people who actually their livelihood depend on dependable weather. And it's bringing that experience into the reality of all the rest of us who depend on these folks to feed.
Ayo Vombara is an African-American writer, and actually she was an English teacher, if you didn't know, Crypto. She wrote in the 1960s with the Black Arts Movement and emergence of Black feminism.
Amazing, amazing author.
Well, and then even today, this piece feels so fresh.
There's also something about science that just doesn't get at the way it all feels. And we see that people are taking facts, very true, very, very stark facts, and going, I can't deal with this. When I say,
as always, to Davian Dial at WPVM Radio in Asheville, North Carolina, for introducing Listen and Be Heard to the broadcast airwaves, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, KEPJ in San Antonio, Texas, KHOI in Ames, Iowa, and KFOI in Red Bluff, California, and other stations that are part of the Pacifica Affiliate Network for cultivating the audio garden in your communities, and our own Listen and Be Heard Network, host of WLBH.org. Please visit us at listenandbeheard.net and sign up for our email newsletter and at our Listen and Be Heard YouTube channel, where you will find unedited video interviews of our featured guests. My name is Martha Senator, and I want to thank you for listening and giving me the opportunity to be heard.
are flown, except you below. Gone to leave this broke down palace on my hands and my knees. I will myself a bed by the water's side. In my time, I will roll. In a bed by the water's side, I will lay my head. Listen to the river sing sweet songs to my soul. River, dawn to take me, sing me sweet.